Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome back to Camo X. Glad you're with us this evening. Overnight America. No, I can't howl like Ryan does. He's got the pipes. I do not. But I'm glad that you are with us this evening here on Overnight America on Camo X. We've got lots of things. We get into all kinds of topics this evening. You've been a part of the show tonight. I appreciate that. To me, it's a lot more interesting hearing from you, listeners. A lot more interesting, and I'm really glad that you've called in a lot this evening. One of the things that Elise Rich mentioned at the top of the hour going through the news, she mentioned that St. Louis has been, frankly, doing better economically right now than Kansas City. And I don't want to be necessarily in competition with our brethren on the western side of the state, but think about it. While Elise Rich was talking, I just jotted down some things that demonstrate some of the economic progress that we've been experiencing just in the last few years. I mean, think about this. Boeing right now has hired an additional 2,000 employees in the past 2 years. They've added 2,000 additional employees, both at Boeing St. Louis and Boeing St. Charles. Because, you know, the missile plant is out in St. Charles. My father-in-law worked there for a short period of time, and they're growing. And so they're adding employees. I've got a lot of friends that work at Boeing, and they tell me, in fact, I got one friend, kind of an upper-middle management person at Boeing. He keeps telling me, Brad, you want to come work at Boeing? We got a job for you. And I keep telling them, pal, if they need somebody as terrible as I am at math and science, you got troubles. But they're hiring right now, right and left at Boeing, because think about it. Look at these projects that Boeing has scored just in the last few years. In fact, in the Pentagon budget that just was signed last week, added an additional 24 F-18 jets. Those are the jets that take off of carriers. 24 new ones. Those were just added in the previous year. We had 24 the previous year as well. So those orders are coming in. We've got countries from right now, Germany, Switzerland, Canada, Finland, Australia, and Germany that are all looking at buying more F-18s. Every one of those will be built right here in St. Louis. Even India is looking at buying F-18s. Now, if they buy them, they're going to assemble those F-18s in India, but the planes themselves, the parts, will be built right here in St. Louis and then shipped to India if that contract goes through. So Boeing is growing. Boeing St. Charles is growing. They've got lots of missile and bomb projects, and they're selling those not just to the United States, but all over the world. Those are being built right here in St. Louis. Look at General Motors. They just announced 3 weeks ago a $1.5 billion investment in that facility in St. Charles, rather in Wentzville, to build additional pickup trucks. I think they're going to even build some electric trucks in Wentzville, certainly the Canyon trucks. A $1.5 billion investment that will include both new structures, which means construction jobs, and new employees, because they're going to build and want to produce more trucks out of that line, $1.5 billion. Look at Square. Square is the company that will be moving over into what used to be the Post-Dispatch building. They're going to bring in hundreds of jobs from across the country here. Bayer, I mean, Bayer's got their problems when they bought Monsanto, mainly because of the litigation dealing with Roundup. We've talked a lot about that on this show and on this station over the past few weeks. but Bayer has decided to make St. Louis their North American headquarters for agricultural sciences. And they're shipping and shifting employees here from not just across the country, but across the globe. Centene is growing. You can't drive through Clayton right now without seeing all the new buildings and construction that's going on. Cortex, my goodness, is exploding in popularity. And with that comes the National Geospatial Agency, the NGA. You know about all of that. Billions of dollars. They're going to be invested in perhaps one of the roughest areas of North St. Louis. Look at the development that's going to happen because of that. And Ballpark Village, those apartments are amazing that overlook Busch Stadium. Those folks are going to have a fantastic view of the games. And, of course, you know, the difference, and Mike, I don't know if you know this, Mike, but do you know the difference between a hot dog that you get at Busch Stadium and a hot dog that you buy at Wrigley Field? Do you know the difference? He's shaking his head no. You can buy a hot dog at Busch Stadium in October. That's the difference. Mike's not even laughing. Mike, come on, that's a funny joke. So all of that growth is going on. Those are just the things that I jotted down in 60 seconds while Elise Rich was going through the news talking about all of the improvement. That fits in with one of the things that I was talking about before the break, that things are better in any way, tangible way that you can measure them. Life in the United States and life on planet Earth is better now than it's ever been before. But my question is, why don't we feel happier? Why don't we feel like, oh my goodness, you know, things are really moving in the right direction? If you went out and took a poll of people and asked them if that's the case, you're not going to get that. You're going to get answers that we're going in the wrong direction. Things are terrible. Things are awful. But by any way that you want to measure it, life in America and life on planet Earth is getting better, not worse. But we're not realizing it. What are your thoughts? Why is it that we can't recognize that things are not only improving, but improving rapidly? What are your thoughts? 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Brad Young on Overnight America, filling in for the vacationing Ryan Recker. God bless you, Ryan. Come back soon. But until then, we'll be right back.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. Glad you're with us this evening. Talking about how, in just about any way you want to look at it, any metric you want to use, any measuring stick you want to borrow, whether it's metric or inches, you know, it doesn't matter. Anything you want to look at, things are better today. But if you talk to people, people don't seem to feel like it. People don't seem to act like it. I know, in my business, I'm in the conflict business, being an attorney. Somebody's always suing somebody and they're not happy. And if that weren't the case, I'd be unemployed. But the point is that folks aren't happy. Whenever, any way you want to look at things, life is getting a lot better. So Dan's called in. Dan's got some ideas. Dan, what's on your mind this evening?
Well, you know, don't want to get political, but hey, you got to give a guy credit to put money in defense where his predecessor didn't. Worked on the immigration policy. But there's a couple of things here. You know, we can't do everything overnight. Like when the county and the city want to get together, make that a 25-year plan or a 50-year plan or a 100-year plan. And another thing is like, the Rams leaving town, the Blues won the Stanley Cup. Just think how much good that did the city. We need professional franchises to put good positive spin on the city.
We do. And, you know, that's an excellent point, Dan, because I will tell you, every season, probably for the past 10 years, I would go to one or two Blues games a year. I'm a baseball guy, and so I've not ever been a big hockey guy, but I would go to a few games. But this year, this past year, you know, you want to talk about that with everyone you talk to, everyone you meet, and that has an ability to bring people together. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Sure. You know, and I mean, yeah, we needed to throw money at Ferguson. There's a problem there. But you know what? I've you know, probably worth about $5 million. Got 17 years of education. My kids are doing well. And you know what? I worked on that. Worked hard for it. It's all common sense. And that's what we need to do, work together like that. You know, I just don't like the way that it's polarized. People had a fit the night after the president was elected. They're still throwing a fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's use some common sense, folks. We could have Ferguson, and we could also have the Rams, you know.
Well, speaking of polarization, Dan, did you have any situations, I don't know if you got together with family or friends for Thanksgiving or for Christmas, but did you have any polarizing conversations during any of those holidays?
Well, you know, we got the liberals from Chicago relatives, and I tell you what, every time anybody opens their mouth, we have actually, since my late mother put a stop to it, we're not allowed to talk about any politics.
Well, I don't know if you heard. I don't know if you heard about this, but if you've got any Alexa devices in your house, Alexa started a new feature in November, which is if you're arguing with relatives about politics, you can say, "Alexa, change the subject," and Alexa will throw out random non-political topics for folks to discuss so that you're not simply focused on what did the president tweet today.
Well, I don't know. You know, if it weren't for my liberal friends and relatives, I wouldn't know how to act because they try to tell me how I'm supposed to live my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so nothing I do seems to be correct. But anyway, it's, you know, just very important to emphasize to your kids, save money, work hard. Hey, we can't spend money. A banker once told me, you know, not spending money is kind of like saving money. And, you know, we need to teach our kids that.
Those are wise words to live by, Dan. Thanks for calling in this evening.
Thank you for hosting me.
Appreciate it. Dan's a wise man, and he makes some good points about our polarization. But the thing that I always struggle with is, you know, why are we so polarized? Why is it? Why can we not agree on some basic things? Like, for example, here's a great example. Several years ago, I remember reading this as a prediction. It wasn't my prediction, but I read this multiple times from some economists. And the prediction was that the ecological footprint of humanity, you know, our carbon footprint or whatever it is you want to call it, is going to be shrinking as we become more economically advanced, that's going to get smaller and smaller, and we're going to get more sustainable, not less. And folks, that's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what's happening. And so I was reading, there was an MIT scientist, his name's Andrew McAfee. He came out with a book, it's called More From Less, and he showed that how nation after nation is beginning to use less stuff. In other words, we're polluting less, generally speaking. We're using less. And here's a way that you can tangibly measure that kind of progress. Think about the last time you drank water from a water bottle. You know, the disposable, ubiquitous water bottles that we all carry, the disposable ones, not the kind, not a Yeti, but the kind that you get that's made out of plastic. Think about when you first saw those bottles. I remember those were really thick plastic. Well, look at them now. They're very thin. They're kind of flimsy. You may not like it, but the footprint, the carbon footprint, the ecological impact of that water bottle today compared to the water bottles of 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. They're minuscule. They're thinner. Many instances now they're becoming biodegradable. And with all of the recycling that's going on, the impact on the environment is becoming less and less. How often do you hear that? When's the last time you turned on CNN and had CNN tell you that ecologically things are getting better? No, what we hear is Greta Thunberg, who shows up and she's what, 15? And all she wants to do, I think she's 16. She's just telling us all about how we're all going to go to ecological Hades because we're destroying the planet. And yet, in every way imaginable, things are getting better. So the next time you hear, I think it's Sir David Attenborough, he's a We see him a lot, particularly if you like to watch things on the History Channel. Here's a quote that he said once. Anyone who thinks you could have infinite growth on a planet with finite resources is either a madman or an economist. But when he said that, you know, what came to my mind is this. What if economic growth means that we actually use less stuff, not more? I gave the example of the plastic bottle, but we also have a drink can. You go to any soda machine, and out comes the aluminum can. How many times have you drank a soda at an aluminum can? All the time, right? Very common. Right now, at least in, it has 13 grams of aluminum in your standard aluminum can. 13 grams. In 1959, those same cans had 85 grams of aluminum. So in the course of from 1960 to now, we've gone from 13 grams or from 85 grams down to 13 grams because that's what economic progress is allowing us to do. And how many of those cans are being recycled every year? So if you look around the planet, people are making more money. Certainly in the United States, economic growth is amazing. I read this week that the black unemployment rate is the lowest it has ever been since measurements began for African Americans in 1970. Best it's ever been as far as the unemployment rate. Millions of people are coming off of welfare. Unemployment is at levels that we've historically never seen. There are more jobs today than there are people to fill them. You know, I represent companies in employment law, and I have companies tell me all the time that they can't hire enough employees. They just can't find enough employees to fill the jobs they have. So things are getting better, and yet, for some reason, we don't realize it. When we come back, we're going to carry on this conversation. We're also going to talk about movies. And by the way, how much money do you need to earn every year to be rich? What do you think? I'm not talking about Elise rich. I'm talking about money rich. How much money do you have to earn to be rich? I've got some polling data on that. See if that matches what you think. If you've got some thoughts or ideas, let us know. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker on Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker. Thanks for being with us this evening. One of the previous callers mentioned, I think it was Dan, was talking about the Rams leaving. And it reminded me, one of the things that I saw in the news today is that the Rams seat license settlement checks are going to be mailed on January 2nd. So if you're one of the more than 11,000 people who plunked down good money for a PSL, it's worth about $14 million. That money will be refunded to you in that class action settlement. Those checks should go out January 2nd, according to the attorneys involved with the case. Ryan Bruning, there was a previous show I was sitting in for Ryan several months ago, and I actually had Ryan on to talk about the litigation. And we had another attorney on as well, talking about how that litigation went. And, you know, there's multiple lawsuits that have been pending against the Rams, and they're, the Rams' winning percentage in court is about the same as their winning percentage the last season they were in St. Louis, which is not good. Actually, they're as bad as they were the last season they were in St. Louis. That's far better than their winning percentage in court, which up to this point is zero. They have not won anything in court. And St. Louis, the St. Louis region, and the Visitors and Convention Center, they're suing the Rams for lots of things. I've gone through that before, but they've itemized approximately $1 billion in damages. That's not what was settled. What was settled last or earlier this year only involved the personal seat licenses. So if you're one of those 11,000 people who plunked down money for a PSL, I would like to say the checks in the mail, but we all know what that means. But the checks should be mailed out on January 2nd. And in another sports story, and I wanted to bring in producer Mike on this one. I don't know if you saw this. It kind of got lost in the haze of whether it was impeachment or Christmas. But did you hear that the Major League Baseball might be getting computerized strike zones? What happened was this. The umpires had a collective bargaining agreement, and just before Christmas, it was announced that they had agreed to a 5-year collective bargaining agreement. But part of that bargaining agreement with Major League Baseball and the umpires involves computerized balls and strikes. The Umpires Association agreed to cooperate and assist if Commissioner Rob Manfred decides to utilize the system at the big league level. Now, I wanted to get Mike Anderson's perspective on this. You're a sports guy. Is this a good thing or a bad thing to have a computerized balls and strikes in Major League Baseball?
Well, I personally feel it's a good thing to continue striving to perfect it. And if it got to a level where it was accurate and reliable, I don't know how you could say it's not a good thing. I've heard people, proponents of it, say, you know, the research shows that only about 14 pitches a game are miscalled, whether it be a strike that was called a ball or a ball that was called a strike. And they seem to think that out of 300 pitches in a game, give or take, 14 isn't that big a deal.
But isn't the thing, though, with those pitches, it's not so much how many pitches, but the critical nature of when those blown calls are made.
Well, even what you would consider a critical pitch, I think if you say that... My point is, I think every pitch is critical. You know, I think if you discount it because it's not a 3-2 pitch or something, I think that you don't understand how important the count is in the at bat, in determining the next pitch, in determining what the pitcher is going to throw you next, in determining what the batter can look for the next pitch. So I think 14 pitches in a game is a huge deal, and nothing's more frustrating than, you know, being proud of some of the free swingers on your team for finally having the discipline to take a pitch that you know the pitcher just threw 2 or 3 inches off the plate, and then seeing that umpire call it a strike.
Ugh. Oh, it's heartbreaking when you see that happen. How is that going to affect if we do go to this system with computerized balls and strikes eventually? And I think if we get there, it'll be done gradually. They're not just going to all of a sudden one day it's all here. It'll come on gradually. But if we get there, how might that type of a computerized system affect what's called framing for catchers? Explain what's framing when you're talking about balls and strikes on how a catcher catches the ball.
Well, so framing is something that Yadier Molina is well known for. A lot of the great catchers are great because they're good framers. So what that means is, it essentially means they know how to catch the ball in order to make it appear as if it were closer to a strike than it may have actually been, to kind of lure the umpire into, you know, calling it a strike if, in fact, it was a couple inches off the plate, kind of where they catch the ball within their glove rather than catching it in the middle. If it's an outside pitch, maybe Yadi will reach and catch it with the very tip of his glove so that the umpire only sees him moving his glove over a little bit, making it look like it was closer to the zone than it really was. So what I think that would do is, it would do a lot to eliminate framing that probably wouldn't be as essential a skill as it is now. And I mean, it's part of the game for now, so it's a great thing if catchers take the time to be good framers. It's not taking anything away from Yadi and the other guys that are good at it. But at the same time, I mean, if the pitch is a ball, it should be called a ball. If it's a strike, it should be called a strike.
One of the criticisms that I've heard, and I'd like your opinion on this, Mike, because I know you're very involved with sports, even more, much more so than I am. But one of the things that I've heard and read the complaints about it is the comparison with yesteryear. You know, baseball is all about stats from the 50s or stats from the 40s and guys who were playing in the 20s. And all of those batters had to deal with the imperfections of an umpire calling a game. Whereas if the batters from 5 years in the future have a computerized balls and strikes, then it's an apples to oranges comparison. Is that going to detract from the game that that batters are having to deal with a computerized pitch count that's different than what guys had to deal with 30 years ago.
You know, for one, if the umpires were as good as they claim to be, there shouldn't be much of a difference. For two, there's things like this that change every single year, and people make the same argument that it's going to unlevel the playing field and we're not going to be able to compare generations, which, first of all, you can't anyways, because the level of athletes now compared to the level of athletes then
is completely different. Completely different.
But back to the original point, things like this happen every single year. We argue about it for a month or two till it goes away and we get used to it. And then we wait for the next thing to argue about. And then we forget about this change and we're glad that it was here. Like, for instance, all the outfield walls used to be nothing but green, right?
Sure.
And it was a big deal. This is going to tarnish the game if we start putting anything on the outfield walls. Do you hear anyone complaining about that anymore?
Nobody. Nobody.
I don't know. I just think an analogy that comes to mind is it's almost as if you were playing darts and you hit a bullseye, but you had to rely on an umpire to tell you that it was in the bullseye. And this umpire says, no, that's not enough of a bullseye for me. So you don't get bullseye points. I don't understand. If you have the technology to get it accurate,
you should.
I mean,
use it.
Tennis has done it. It's the best system in sports. The Eagle Eye, Hawkeye technology that they use, it's made huge improvements in the game. Matches are fair now. And with the amount of money tied in these baseball games and individual player contracts and cities and organizations and teams, why would you not want to get it right? Especially if it doesn't add time to the game. If anything, it would make it quicker because you can't argue balls and strikes anymore.
Yeah, that's gone. That element's gone.
Right.
One of the things that the biggest changes that I think is going to be coming upon professional sports is going to be legalized gambling when it comes to sports betting. Supreme Court said that's going to be open now. A lot of states are embracing that, just like Illinois is trying to embrace legalized marijuana for the tax revenue. Do you think this move towards legalized gambling on sports betting, do you think that has any bearing in this decision, the timing of this decision, that will allow computerized balls and strikes?
I mean, this is purely conjecture on my part, but it's ironic timing for sure, and it's definitely a good way for the MLB to protect itself from umpires being paid off. I mean, if you don't think that kind of thing happens, not saying it's in baseball, but if you don't think that happens, you know, in professional sports in general, I think you're naive. I mean, there's allegations against FIFA for refs being paid. And
sure.
To think that it could never happen in Major League Baseball, I think you're naive. So to institute this kind of thing with more money being tied to it now is probably a good safe goat.
Well, and I wasn't even looking at it from that perspective, although that is certainly a big question. But if you're a sports bettor, you don't want to lose a bet based upon a legitimate but bad call
just
by an umpire.
Just a bad call. Yeah.
It's a bad call. If you've got $1 million riding on this game, you don't want that game. You don't want to lose that $1 million because the umpire was looking at some lady on the third row and missed the call, and you just lost $1 million because of it.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at that and saying if more and more gambling money is going to be going into the game, is that part of the emphasis on making sure that the balls and strikes are correct?
I mean, I would say that's definitely part of what went into making the decision. I would think so. Although there's been talk about it before gambling became a topic of discussion. So you never know, but they seem to tie too well together to discount it.
You heard it right here from Mike Anderson. Thank you, Mike. When we come back from the break, I want to delve into this topic of how much money does it take to be considered rich? What is rich? What's the number? What's that magic number where if someone's making this much money, you know what? They're rich. We've got some polling data on that just came out from YouGov, and I want to see what you think. What kind of money does it take to be considered rich? You know, well-heeled, rich. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker on Overnight America.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michael's Flooring, the flooring experts. michaelsflooringoutlet.com.
Welcome back to Camo X, Overnight America. Thanks for staying up late with us this evening. The question before you, the question before the court of public opinion, that is, this evening is this. What does it take to be rich? What number? Is there an income point? Is there a number of zeros? What does it take from your perspective, an income, before someone is considered rich? Jeff is calling in, and Jeff's got an opinion on this. Jeff, welcome to Camo X.
Thanks. I got a comment about the you were asking people what they got for Christmas first.
Oh, sure.
I got the complete Star Trek Next Generation Blu-ray.
Oh, now listen, you're going to drag me down because I'm a complete Trekkie.
Yeah.
So that is fantastic. So with
and
the
I
Blu-ray,
got a couple of ships. I got a couple of ships too.
Nice. So if you've got the Blu-ray, then it's going to have also some bonus features with behind the scenes interviews and.
Yeah.
Oh man, definitely. I got to tell you right now, Jeff, I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah, I remember when those DVDs first came out, they were like $50 a season, and now they're like $50 for a complete series.
Mm-hmm. So I am just so tempted to go with CBS All Access, just so I can watch Star Trek Picard, and I can keep track of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, but my other comment is about the rich question.
Yes.
I think it's more about a feeling than number.
And what do you mean by that?
You can, if you have what you need, you feel rich, really. I mean, it's just more of a personal preference, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much one single number.
Sure, that's from your perspective, but do you have in your mind a number for someone else? I mean, you might be making $20,000 a year and feel that you're grateful and you're well off and you're good to go. But externally, is there a number that you think if somebody's making this amount of money, then from your perspective, they're rich? Is there a number that comes to your mind?
I guess if you want to go by just numbers, maybe 100,000 plus a year.
Yeah, you're in good company. There's a lot of folks. I want to break down those numbers, and a lot of folks fall into that same category, meaning if you hit $100,000, you're considered rich. But as you mentioned, that it's not a dollar amount, it's what makes you comfortable. But, you know, there are a lot of things. If you live in St. Louis, don't you think money doesn't go as far as if you live in St. Genevieve?
I think in the general area, it can go pretty far in the St. Louis area now. And
yeah.
Like New York.
Exactly.
$100,000 will probably be like $50,000 a year.
It's nothing because you can't buy a house. I got a friend of mine who used to live in California, Jeff. We went to law school together. And when we got out of law school, I stayed here in St. Louis and he went to Los Angeles. And he was making triple my salary in Los Angeles. And he could only afford a 600 square foot apartment that was a 1 hour drive each way from his place of work. He had triple my salary. I was living here. I bought a house, you know. So yeah, location makes a lot of a difference in that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It does.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. But like I said, the feeling and the amount, but mostly, I think it's more feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, the most important thing is making sure you make enough money to keep buying Star Trek on Blu-ray DVDs.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff. Hey, thanks for calling in this evening.
Hey, good night.
Appreciate it. Good night, sir. So, yeah, Jeff makes a good point. It's how you feel, but the point of the poll is just trying to get you to make a decision. And there's actually, I think, a valid policy reason to come up with this kind of data. But you know, rich and poor, let me give you an example why it's hard to define. In the 1970s, one of the big issues before the United States Supreme Court dealt with pornography. Because cities would pass laws banning pornography. And so the question became, how do you define pornography? Because one of the classic legal principles going back hundreds of years is that laws cannot be arbitrary. And what do I mean by arbitrary? Arbitrary means if I want to enforce a law in one instance one way and enforce it a different way for someone else, that's arbitrary. And laws cannot be enforced arbitrarily. So the question came to the Supreme Court, how do you enforce the laws banning pornography unless you can define it? Kind of like what Mike has made the point earlier, arbitrary balls and strikes. It's the same thing. So you have to get away from that arbitrary nature. So this, one of the Supreme Court justices famously was asked, how do you define pornography? And the Supreme Court justice said, well, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. And to some extent, isn't that kind of the same thing with rich and poor? Is that we kind of know what rich is, we kind of know what poor is, but how do you specifically define those concepts in terms of dollar amounts? Now, one way that people do it is in percentages. So the top 5% of earners. So that's going to change and fluctuate based upon the inflation rate and so forth. So that's really one way. But understanding where you and I, what you and I think about what's rich and poor on the income scale, that's of great importance for politicians to formulate policies. Because like right now, if you were one of the 18 people that watched the last Democrat debate, I think there was about 18 people, maybe 22 if you don't count the news organizations. So if you were one of those folks, the few who watched the last Democrat debate, one of the main topics of discussion on that and prior debates was how do we raise revenue? And you've heard it from Bernie Sanders, you've heard it from Elizabeth Warren, talking about we want to tax the rich. We want to tax the rich, tax the rich. The rich have to pay their fair share. But where those tax policies are ultimately chosen and drawn, where those lines are drawn, depends upon what the politicians think your definition of rich actually is. And so that can be a profound difference because you might be in a 32% tax bracket, but if you're considered rich, well, the government under the next administration might bump you up to the 50 or 60% tax bracket. In fact, Elizabeth Warren has proposed a 70% tax bracket. Well, who's going to live in a 70% tax bracket? Nobody. You're not going to live in that tax bracket. So when we come back from this break, I want to talk about what Americans think constitutes rich or poor. What are your thoughts? 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Brad Young, sitting in for Ryan Recker on Overnight America. Don't go away.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.